It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello, welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. And today we are back to the beginner's guide to professional wrestling in Japan. For the first time in 5 or 6 months, we've come back to one of our favourite features on the show. And I know you like it as well. You've been asking for more shots at the beginner's guide to professional wrestling. And we're going to look at a company today we have not looked at before with a guest presenter who's not looked at this company before. Will you please welcome Ashley Rose Nova of DDT? Is DDT got... What website do you write for?
I'm at The Chair Shot, and I'm also at Daily DDT now.
There you go. Okay.
Change direction.
Things have moved around a little bit. But yeah, Ash, what were your... How are you for a start? Let's start there. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. A lot of new changes, you know, just catching up on things, but I'm great.
Okay, that's excellent. And what did you think of Wing when you'd... when you watched this, did you have any prior conceptions of what this stuff was going to be like, or what did you think of the overall show presentation?
Well, I didn't really have a whole lot of experience, you know, with watching Wing. I do recall maybe seeing a few, like, you know, matches here or there. As you know, the company didn't really last that long, you know, which is unfortunate. Highly impressive, very highly. It was, in a sense, kind of what I've expected, but it had that little extra kick, you know, that you would really need.
Brought by certain amounts of barbed wire and death.
Yeah, that kick.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Wing was basically started by... Kaishi Ibaragi and Kashio Ozaki, who were former FMW employees, and they had help from, I've forgotten his name now, Wally Yamaguchi. There you go. Wally Yamaguchi, who was one of the magazine editors at the time, was training wrestlers, was highly involved with Michinoku Pro, and they'd all worked for FMW and AJW and various companies in Japan. And they kind of wanted to do things themselves, and they didn't want to be beholden to budgets and, you know, try and make things that was a different kind of look, and they wanted to rely on storylines and good matches and a fair bit of violence, it has to be said, to get things over. And that's kind of where we're looking at with here. This isn't the big production of FMW where you have exploding double hell death barbed wire matches. This is a ring in Currican Hall, and that's pretty much as simple as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it has, you know, it does have, you know, that type of feel, but it's very, you know, simply done. It's very simplistically done, so, which is nice. It's, you know, it's nice because you also have that mix of, like, martial arts and wrestling with it as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's a nice crossover here. It's obviously highly influenced by FMW. In fact, the first match on the card we're looking at... Well, I should explain a few little bits here, really. We're back in 1996. We're looking at Wing today, 11th of the 9th. It's just called a Wing event, which was from Currican Hall. There was 2,002 people there at K-Hall, which is a pretty big crowd for K-Hall. It doesn't hold that many now. They've reduced the size because of people aren't really allowed up on the balcony as much as they used to be back in the day. And boy, that balcony comes into play quite a bit in this particular show. And by this point, Wing had started a couple of years before, and they'd kind of built this niche audience, and it was based upon the fan favorites Mitsuhara Mitsunaga, top villain Mr. Pogo had come over from FMW, guys like Hideki Hosaki who come over from FMW as well, and most probably their two biggest draws at this particular time, Wing Kanemura, or Yoshiko Kanemura, and Bad Boy Hido, who were two wrestlers who kind of embodied what Wing were about. And they were baby faces, really, even though they both kind of wrestled like heels. They were essentially the Sandman and Tommy Dreamer of Wing, if you want to compare it to ECW. In fact, I see more comparisons with Wing to ECW than there is to FMW, to be honest with you. What were your thoughts on these two? Because they spend a lot of time talking about this philosophy of Wing and what the company means to them. For these kind of fans, how important is that, Ash?
Well, as far as these kind of fans, I mean, they're incredibly passionate. I could tell you that much. I mean, you know, as you know, wrestling and in general in Japan, you know, the crowd is a little bit different compared to, you know, an American audience or a UK audience. It was nice to see, you know, those fans being incredibly invested in the event.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, it was very important because it wasn't just, you know, don't get me wrong, I love New Japan and everything, but if you think back like years ago, probably around the same time, the crowds are very calm, you know, they're very respectable. They clap, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. This crowd was completely, the best way I can describe it is it was a crowd that you could see happen in the States. So they were highly invested actually in the show. They were involved in the show too as well, which is important. So I think that actually really helps as well.
Yeah, it was, they were really hot for this because they really believe in the people that they're supporting here. I mean, this is off the beaten track. If you think FMW was off the beaten track at the time, it was, but it was still relatively mainstream compared to Wing. These guys were not earning a lot of money for doing what they loved in a very hardcore style without all the pageantry of FMW, and they were trying to make noise in a very different way. So we'll have a look at this card. Now, by this point, they'd actually started working with FMW and were cross-pollinating matches all the time, specifically on the big cards for FMW, because Atsushi and Ita had retired, which we're going to talk about in a future episode of the Beginner's Guide. But we had to start somewhere, so we're going to start with Wing, because this kind of lays into the next episode, which we're going to talk to Chelsea about when we look at Wing's seventh anniversary show of that particular year. Right then. This card starts with Crushing Matamori and Shark Tikishio versus Kiari Nakayama and Ri in a 16-minute and 2-second match, which unfortunately did not make it to the commercial tape, so we didn't get to see it, which is really annoying, because Matamori and Tikishio were one of the best tag teams in Japanese wrestling at the time, and certainly one of the best women's tag teams I've ever seen. They're the leather-bound ladies from FMW, who me and Chelsea quite like from Dream Slam 1. If you go back to the Dream Slam 1, you can hear us talking about them. So let's go to the actual first match we did see, which was Tetsuya Kuroda versus Toru in 30 minutes and 47 seconds, which was an interesting birthright into this particular show, because you found out that it was going to be a one-camera show. This is budget wrestling, after all. And that one camera has got a lot of work to do, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really does. There's a lot to keep up with.
Yes. So what were your thoughts on this particular matchup? I'll go through with some extra information for these people, about these two people, because they were kind of like the young boys of their day, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As far as this match, you know, it's a decent amount of time. It was a great opener. In my opinion, well, you know, a great opener as to what we saw leading into the event. Very strong opening. You know, you have your, I guess you could say, your traditional sense of Japanese strong style beginning, and then it kind of really does pick up towards the end. So it's, in my opinion, it was a really good beginning as to what we could see.
Yeah.
It's a shame we didn't see that first one, but
yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, like, I've got the cage match bios here because where are we? Kishiwada ended up being a much bigger name in DDT than he ever did in Wing, though he was trained by Mr. Pogo, so obviously he was going to start in Wing, and equally, Toru spent more time in DDT and Dragon Gate than he did in Wing. And also Tetsuya Kuroda actually spent more time in Noah than he did in Wing as well. So they became wrestlers that were more famous after this event. But Kuroda was actually trained by, he says, looking it up again because he just lost the page when he shouldn't have closed it. Kuroda was actually trained by Atsushi and Ita. He was an FMW guy. So, you know, they both had long careers after this particular matchup, and they're both still wrestling in their 50s, still doing indie work, or late 40s, early 50s. They're still doing indie work now, so it clearly they'd had a good grounding. What surprises me with this matchup is they're both really good in the ring, but they start off brawling.
Yeah, they actually did. You're what, right.
Why bother?
Just go into it. Mm. No, you're right. They did. And then it's, I would say probably halfway through, it kind of changed into something different. So yeah. I'm not sure if it was planned that way or maybe they originally just wanted to start off brawling.
You went to a brawl and a wrestling match broke out, basically.
Yeah, I thought it was decent. It was interesting. But it no, was definitely... you can definitely tell the transition probably halfway through the match.
It was...
And it just happens really quickly, too.
It was really crisp, though. I did like the way they did it. It was really... I just liked the match. It was just really crisp. For two young guys who were trying to make a name for themselves, it was just a really crisp effort, and that was really cool. The next matchup was Koji Nakagawa, everyone's favorite Bret Hart impersonator, and Masato Tanaka. Yes, that Masato Tanaka, ECW World Heavyweight Champion, future FMW World Heavyweight Champion, current wrestler for Wrestle 1, and they went up against Taka Michinoku, the best hype man in wrestling, currently of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Zack Sabre Jr.'s tag partner and hype man, and Shuichi Funaki, better known to all as Sho Funaki, head of Japanese talent relations for the WWE. So there you go. There's four blokes. You've done a fair bit in wrestling since this particular time. And for 10 minutes and 41 seconds, it was a cracking little tag match. What's your thoughts on this, Ashley?
Well, I mean, I thought it was a good tag match. I thought it was probably one of the best matches of that night. So I enjoyed it.
I think, I was going to say, I think all four of these guys can clearly go, and they had long-term careers in wrestling and are still big names in professional wrestling to this day. But it is, like, I just find it interesting that they all came together on this little card at Currican Hall 30 years ago.
Yeah, there was a lot of the tags, they were very smooth. There was a lot of really, really good teamwork. I mean, overall, I just thought it was a really good match in general.
Anyone
very for you know a tag match.
Also, Masato Tanaka's mullet is gorgeous in this matchup. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a thing of sheer joy and wonder. It flies back there. He could take off with it. Koji Nakagawa as well. I've just been watching loads of Koji Nakagawa lately, and he's got the Bret Hart like greased hair down to a T. And it's just like he does the sharpshooter, he wears pink and black in the full leotard with the long, it's just brilliant. It's like, why didn't anyone else think of that? He's not impersonating Bret Hart, really.
Bret Hart, he really isn't.
But he's doing everything Bret Hart does, including the way he walks.
Yeah, no, he does definitely wear that pink and black.
Mm-hmm.
But very, very talented in the ring. Very, very good, you know.
Tough as old boots.
You know,
as well.
So much I don't even pay attention to the whole Bret Hart thing.
I think it's very subtle. You had to see it. Maybe I had to want it, but I was like, hey, it's Koji. He wrestles exactly like Bret Hart. Sho Funaki's mullet as well. Sho doesn't, if you ever see like Monday Night Raw or pay-per-view commentary and they pan to the Japanese commentary booth, Sho has the remnants of what this mullet was left. He's got this side parting going on with a short back and sides, but it was one of the most glorious mullets in pro wrestling back in the mid-1990s. And only in places like Wing could you see it let loose and free. Also, Taka Michinoku does not look any different today than he did in 1994.
He really does not at all. Not from 96.
Not from 96,
in the
yes.
90s, he looks exactly, pretty much almost exactly the same.
Bit more of a flick to his hair. Walks the same way. Obviously a bit more ponchon for top rope springboard maneuvers. Doesn't do that as often as he used to. But still, it's Taka Michinoku, and, you know, he's awesome. The basic storyline for these was Sho and Taka, who are two Michinoku pro wrestlers, were representing the honor of Wing in a straight-up wrestling match against Nakagawa and Tanaka. Tanaka and Nakagawa won, but it was a back and forth straight up tag match. It was really, really good. Of course, Sho Funaki and Taka Michinoku, along with Wally Yamaguchi, who we've already discussed, would go on to WWE and be part of Kaientai, which would in turn become the founding of his dojo when he came back to Japan.
Yeah, as far as this tag match, there wasn't really anything, you know, as far as like, I would say, you know, compared to the rest of the show, it was, you know, just, I would say maybe like a standard tag match.
Yes.
That you would see in Japan, like... but very, very good. It's very high paced, very like a lot of clean transitions from one move to another move.
Yeah, I think Tanaka gets undersold for how good a technical wrestler he is. Like, you watch this match and he's like, he's known for taking chair shots to the head and setting himself on fire and, you know, barbed wire and stuff. He didn't need to do any of that stuff. This was perfectly acceptable. And I think it's one of the reasons why he's had such a long career after FMW. You know, he's still an in-demand draw. Even like 10 years ago, he was the first never open weight champion, a belt that was supposed to be designed around young people. And it was Masato Tanaka, who was in his late 30s at the time, that took the first championship. Still a viable draw for a lot of wrestling promotions because he's just a good wrestler. Right then, we'll move on to the next matchup. Now, Wing were high-level proponents of a very specific style and genre of professional wrestling called monster wrestling. And Ashley knows what's coming because she's reading the sheet. And monster wrestling was about taking two famous monsters and having them wrestle one another. In this particular case, Super Leather, who bears a remarkable experience to Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw movies, and Jason the Terrible, who bears another remarkable resemblance to Jason Voorhees. This match lasted for 60 minutes and 48 seconds and was actually really good. I love this match because it was just like ridiculous fun that Wing became famous for. It was the kind of thing that just kind of like set things off in such a brilliant way. What are your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was, I mean, I really enjoyed it as well. I actually never seen this. Like, you know, this was kind of new to me. I mean, like I said, you know, I had some experience with Wing, but I never fully watched it. Like, I haven't gone back to fully watch it, but I thought it was entertaining. I mean, and actually, I want to say this is the match with where the balcony gets involved.
Yes, it is. For the first time, anyway.
Yeah, at least for the night.
Yeah, we should explain first of all who these people are. Jason the Terrible, we haven't talked about before, but he was a really good wrestler. You know, he's just known as Jason the Terrible.
Tracy Smothers
was the second Jason the Terrible. There was two.
There was two.
Right. I'll take some explaining, but I'll explain that in a second. So there was.
Yeah, that's good. Let me have you do that. Because I was like, I had no idea. This is news to me. Go for it.
Okay. The original Jason the Terrible, who's no one seems to know his first name, his actual real wrestling name, he started off in Wing and US Independence. I was reading magazine articles backing about him in the early 90s and late 80s. And he really caught on in Wing, and he had this big presence, he had charisma, even though he's wrestling through an ice hockey mask. And then he had visa issues. This happens a lot, because it'll also explain the same thing with Leatherface, which is a story we've gone over before, but I'll go over it again just to make sure everybody knows. So Jason the Terrible had visa issues, and he was sticking to the United States, but they still had the gimmick, and everyone loved Jason the Terrible. So they got Tracy Smothers, who was about the same size, bit thinner, to fill in as Jason the Terrible, because he could actually get to the United to Japan. So he did, and then the original Jason came back and he had his visa sorted, and this was in IWA. I believe this was after Wing. Okay. Because obviously Wing only went to 97. I think this happened around about 2000. And they had Jason versus Jason at Currican Hall. And Tracy nearly hung the original Jason the Terrible at one point over the balcony with a chain. It was a grim, grim match, and it was lose-or-leave IWA, and I think the original Jason lost. So, yeah, it was quite the moving and emotional affair. I've seen that match. It was very good.
I am so disappointed myself that I did not even know that. But that was new to me. I was like, what, there's two of them?
Yeah, there's two of them. Now you have to go back and watch the other Jason stuff.
Now I have to go find that.
Yeah.
That is something I have to go see.
And of course there is Leatherface, who was originally Corporal Kirshner. I think it was Dale Patterson was Mike Kirshner, that was it. Dale Patterson, I'm pretty sure it was Dale Patterson. Can't see he hasn't got his real name on the cage match thing, but Leatherface, been around for ages, was Corporal Kirshner in the WWE in the early 80s, caught on in Japan, was a bit of a hard case and a bit of a short tempered, actually assaulted somebody during a wrestling match. And was arrested for punching a fan in the face and breaking his face. So he actually spent some time in Japanese prison whilst another Leatherface came in to take over the original Leatherface role. And then when he got out of prison, of course, they had the Leatherfaces tag team. Which went well. That was when the assault happened. So Leatherface was an interesting character. Do you know who the first monster wrestler was, though?
Do you want me to take a guess?
I have a guess at this, because this is brilliant.
Who was the first monster wrestler? Kent. Just in Wing?
The first character used in Wing, yeah. The first monster wrestler character used in Wing. Given that you've had Leatherface, you've had Jason the Terrible.
You have Freddy Krueger.
There you go. Freddy was the first major character, which was played by Doug Gilbert, Eddie Gilbert's brother.
I was just a good guess. I was like, I know that they had a few of them.
Yes, the original Freddy Krueger in wrestling was actually played by Tommy Gilbert, Doug and Eddie's dad, who wrestled as Jason the Terrible in the late 1970s, early 80s in the USWA or Memphis wrestling at the time, CWA as it was back then. He wrestled as a babyface Freddy Krueger.
that's really good.
Which is hilarious. It didn't change anything either. It was just like standard Southern tag team, come on, hot tag babyface stuff as well. Which is hilarious. And then his son, Doug Gilbert, took it over in Wing. There was a bizarre tag team tournament where Eddie played, I believe, Hannibal Lecter. And Doug was Freddy Krueger, and they turned on the promotion after a promo. They took their masks off and cut horrible promos about Wing and then left the building. Bizarre kind of thing. Also, I have seen as well Freddy Krueger versus Jason, which was on one of the most famous Wing cards.
So you mean to tell me you saw that before the horrific film?
Yes.
It was probably better than the film.
But yes, Doug and Leatherface had a right cracker in Osaka. You should go look that up. That's on there as well. But yes, so there was a lot of monster wrestling. Let's get back to this match. They actually went for, where was it? I've actually deleted the page, so I'm going to have to reopen it because I did it by mistake.
Let me pull it up.
Thank you.
16 minutes and 48 seconds.
Thank you very much. Correct? Yes, 16 minutes. Right? Sorry?
Does that sound about right?
Yes, that was right. 60 minutes, 48 seconds. It was a pretty good match. In fact, for two lumbering guys who can't do an awful lot. In fact, Jason really impressed me. He had some really crisp offense, and this is the best Super Leather looked for a long time watching this particular match. And I like the way Jason sold stuff, and he was kind of a babyface monster. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. And I had a lot of time for Jason the Terrible because he never really caught on in North America, and I think he should have done, though possibly with a far better gimmick because he was a better man than this. What did you think of this, Ash?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was the first time I actually had seen it, like I said, you know, so it was very impressive, you know. I have to agree with you, too. I mean, Jason was probably the best one in that match. But I thought they both did very well. And, you know, I love the fact that as soon as they actually go from the audience to the balcony, the audience gets really invested in it.
Mm.
So it was nice to see. I mean, we don't really see that nowadays, I guess.
Well,
as much.
They've banned them going to the balcony
now. Well, that's true. Well, that too. But I mean, I'm talking about as far as the fans, as far as their reactions.
Yeah, I think you get the U in and the R in, but you don't get the. It's very Memphis, isn't it? It's very Memphis Heat. It's very sing along a match, and yeah, which you didn't. This was the first time you was kind of seeing it from a Japanese audience. If you got like there was some heated stuff that went on the last couple of years, where you got more of this in like a New Japan crowd, but you haven't had it like this with a New Japan crowd. I think you'd have to have real serious heel heat for this to happen. And I don't know who'd bring that, to be honest.
I don't know either. That's what I was trying to think just now.
I mean, Minoru Suzuki's the guy, but Minoru's too beloved to do, like, be a real... He is a real proper heel. He's a badass, and he's horrible, but he's not, like, horrible. Everyone loves Minoru Suzuki, don't they? Even though they're terrified of him. So, you know.
Yeah. It's difficult
to get this kind of heat going.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that, too. I was like, what could... kind of be that way this year, and I just don't see it either. Too
Jericho gets there, he gets pretty good heat there, but it is difficult to get that white hot level of heat that this match had, even on a small scale, you know. Hometown boy stuff, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's people that could get that kind of sympathy, but it's a different kind of wrestling feel in New Japan to this particular audience as well. But yes, this match was exceptionally good and kind of like summed up both of their careers. It was way better than it should have been for what it was. The next match, though, was a corker. 10 minutes and 48 seconds. Hideki Hosaki and Hido, bad boy Hido, defeat the Headhunters in 10 minutes and 48 seconds of a thoroughly thrilling matchup, which I really, really enjoyed. I love the Headhunters. I think they're awesome. And I've talked before on the podcast about I don't know how they didn't get as far as they should have done. They should have done way more than they did, though I understand they were prickly to work with. And Hideki Osaki and Hido, bad boy Hido, are just brilliant in this matchup. What's your thoughts on this matchup, Ash? Because this is much more traditional fare, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I mean, to be honest with you, I enjoyed the whole show. Actually, just, you know, pretty much sit through and watch it, but... I don't really have anything to say about it. they were all really good matches. I mean, it's really hard to, you know, really compare all of them, I guess you could say, to one another. So, I mean, I was just highly impressed as far as with the whole card that I was able to see.
For minimal budget as well. They clearly were not earning a lot of money doing this.
Yeah, it was very obvious that it was minimal budget.
Okay, then we get to the main event, which was Hayabusa, one of the greatest aerial wrestlers of his particular generation, against Bad Boy Hido, pulling double duty. And if you look at a lot of win cards, Bad Boy Hido and Win Kanemura pull an awful lot of double duty. When we were saying this was low-budget wrestling, it really, really was low-budget wrestling. Didn't get much lower than these particular matches. 18 minutes and 37 seconds in a street fight. This was no DQ, no count out, which is good because they spent an awful lot of time outside the ring. Hayabusa loses his mask very quickly in this particular matchup. But as everyone knows, he's Hideki Ozeki. He's not really that bothered.
I mean, I think he loses it, in the first minute? 4 minutes or something
like
that?
Yeah. But then you have this absolutely breathtaking brawl, and it all becomes about Bad Boy Hido trying to outlast his FMW opponent. You know, Hayabusa comes in from FMW. He's the lead ace of the company in FMW, whereas Bad Boy Hido is a little step behind Wing Kanemura as the lead baby face of Wing. So there's this interesting dynamic of where these two wrestlers place themselves, and then Hido does lose in the end, but it's not an effort that does him any disservice. He wins the match of the hearts and minds of the people who are watching the show, definitely, but it's certainly a story of how to get somebody over without losing. For them to lose and for you to win and still keep your heat yourself. It was really interesting the way it played out. It wasn't just all technical high spots as you'd expect from Bad Boy Hido and Hayabusa. Hayabusa is one of the best aerial wrestlers and you of his generation. You definitely see that here. But it's certainly there's a lot of psychology work that Bad Boy Hido brings to this match. He's more strike-based. He's more basic. He's more martial arts orientated. This is a really interesting match for me to watch because it's a different kind of match. Because normally promoters, if you look at the classic match in ECW between Jinsei Senzaki and Hayabusa versus Rob Van Dam and Sabu. There's four like-for-like wrestlers having this wonderful spot fest in this athletic contest. But this was a lot different to that. This was people having to think and place things together and make things much more of a story, which I thoroughly enjoyed. What's your thoughts on this one, Ash?
Yeah, for that being the main event, I can see why. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was... you are right. You know, you do not have to, and I've explained that to people too. You don't have to, someone doesn't have to win to be over. And I think there's a lot of confusion in that. And it's very hard for me to explain to them. It doesn't matter necessarily if whoever's in the ring wins or loses. It's the matter of how they gain the crowd's respect.
Yeah.
If you've won the crowd's respect at the end of the night, then you're already over. So, I mean, this is, you're right, it is a perfect example of that, because as soon as the match, ends, everyone, directly goes, to the person that ends up becoming over. It is a very different match, because it is, there is a lot of martial arts, there is a lot of wrestling, but there is a lot of elements of a street fight being thrown into it too, because that is what the match is supposed to be, but it's not overwhelming as far as it being more of a street fight over the actual athleticism in the match.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from with that. So then that kind of brings us to the end of that particular card. Is there anything you'd like to say about the event and Wing, now that you've seen it? What impressed you most about this particular company?
For it being, a small company, on a very minimum budget, it was nice to see a large crowd.
Yeah. This wasn't the norm, by the way, but it was nice to see a large crowd, yes.
It was nice. It was nice to see, everyone fully invested in the show. It was nice to see, all different types of talent. I would definitely suggest at least, people to at least check it out at least once,
Yeah.
Just one time at least. Just give it a try.
Yeah, I think it's very different to the other things we've looked at. Certainly just because they don't have the production budget. It's closer to modern day Big Japan Pro Wrestling, which was an interesting take on, how Big Japan started. Big Japan started the following year, and I think there was a lot of things to be learned from Wing. And how to keep your budget small, make sure you have enough wrestlers to do the job, how to keep them all employed without costing too much money. So I think Wing becomes very influential, and IWA starts not long after. Well, it's kind of already started on and off at the same time, mm-hmm. as this, because we've already had the deathmatch tournaments, and there's all sorts of things starting around about the same time. But Wing is still they're still producing shows, still producing video. Not particularly well produced video and one camera shot video, but the second one I looked at, which was a Wing Second Rising event, which is from earlier in the year. I watched that and it was still one camera, but it was well shot and well put together and well paced. Wing isn't just like a one trick pony of violence. There's a lot of things and intricate stories going on there. Helpful that they have FMW to drag some star power to the company, but I don't think they necessarily need it to make a watchable wrestling product.
But, they actually had a lot of talent, for it being a small promotion, too. I wanted to throw that in there. They actually had a decent amount.
Yeah.
Now, once I, went back and looked, as far as, who has competed in Wing, they had a decent amount of performers, which was surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's all good stuff. The show's pretty solid. And they've kind of really thought about it well. And I think the influence really comes into places like Big Japan Pro Wrestling and people like that who followed. Certainly CZW would be very influenced by Wing as well. How to use get a roster together on a budget and work them in the right way to get the most out of them. I think that's probably the most important thing we can learn from Wing in this particular time period. Right then, that about covers the show for today. We've been looking at Wrestling International New Generations. And Ashley Rosenova has been my guest today. Thank you, ma'am. Where can we find you on your social medias there?
You can find me at Instagram, Twitter, at Ash Rosenova. And you can also find me at The Chair Shot. You can also find me at Daily DDT now. But I am open to most conversations. So.
Please talk to Ashley. She does like to talk and have a good conversation about professional wrestling. If you want to talk to me about professional wrestling or anything else, you can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. The show you can find at Troopany Show on Twitter. You can find us on the Facebook of The Troopany Show and on Patreon, The Troopany Show, where you can keep us free forever for everyone. Tomorrow we'll be telling stories where I will be looking at something that I can't remember, but I've already recorded. I'm trying to remember now what I did yesterday. What did I do yesterday?
All I know is we had a very, very intricate discussion about mullets.
We did have a very intricate discussion about mullets.
Very important.
Mullets are important to the entire lifeblood of the show. In fact, that reminds me, if you are a fan of professional wrestling, which I assume you are because you're listening to this show, go to powerslam.tv and use our code MULLETWATCH to get a free month off a subscription for a year with them. They'll be telling stories tomorrow. Can't remember what it's about. Wrestling. There you go.
We have very important production meetings.
We do. We do have much very, very important production meetings where we talk about hair a lot. And
we do, don't we?
We do. See, I told you, I recorded that last week when I said to Alex, you know, since you were last on the show, we've had two new presenters come on the show. We've got John Dinsdale coming on in a couple of weeks. And he was like, well, yeah, I said, they're very surprised the amount of hair talk we do. And he said, but that's what we do. We talk about hair and race wrestling occasionally.
I mean, really, isn't that what helps professional wrestling is good hair?
Look how many conversations we've had about Sonata's beard.
Oh, yes, my frosted tip king.
Not so much anymore. He's kind of like dyed out the beard. It's kind of gone a bit flat.
It was fabulous. It was glorious, like we were saying.
It is glorious, indeed. To, you know, not overly Bobby Roode things.
Oh, no, that's a different type of glorious. It was magical.
Oh, I remember where I was talking about. In fact, you will definitely appreciate where I was talking about. Hang on. What was I looking at? Last week, I'm trying to think now. Oh, I can't find it. Don't matter. I'll have to edit a bunch of this stuff out. I was trying to avoid editing, but I'll get on with it anyway. Yeah, tomorrow I'll be telling stories, and it'll be fun. Let's leave it at that. On Wednesday, we'll have the continuation of the invasion angle as Dara and his friends look at the way the invasion angle worked in WWE in the early 2000s. Don't worry. Wrestling Rewind is going to reboot. Me and Dara are having a talk. We're having a chat. We're trying to figure out how's the best way of going about the Wrestling Rewind. And we'll keep going with this particular story of the invasion angle because there's plenty of it left. Dara did an awfully thorough job of investigating this particular angle. So there's plenty of that left to keep us going. And then me and Dara, we're going to have a reboot of Wrestling Rewind as soon as we possibly can. We may need to find some new guests for him to work with, though. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. Take care. And that was the longest sign-off we've ever done.
It was worth it, though.
It was worth it. We talked about hair and Dara. Because Dara's cool. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.